This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. 2014 is the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act. How effective has the Wilderness Act been in protecting our public lands both nationwide and in Washington State? What is the status of our wilderness areas and what efforts are currently being made to enhance and preserve them? To help answer these questions, I have as my guest Tom Uniak, Conservation Director for Washington Wild, a nonprofit whose mission is to protect and restore wildlands and waters in Washington State through advocacy, education, and civic engagement. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Diane. It's great to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Washington Wild?
Sure. Washington Wild was founded in 1979. We're actually celebrating our 35th anniversary this year. And we do work to protect wildlands and waters in Washington State. We do a lot of work with coalitions of other conservation and recreation groups to achieve our goals. And we particularly spend a lot of time working with what I call new conservation voices, you know, sportsmen, hunters, Republicans, kind of non-traditional allies to actually make sure that we have compelling messengers about how to protect wildlands.
What is the goal of the 1964 Wilderness Act?
The 1964 Wilderness Act was really an attempt to kind of protect wild areas and the benefits that they provide to the American people in perpetuity. It is the strongest protection for federal lands that we have. And in 1964, I think there was a sense that a lot of our wild places were not going to be here for our grandkids' grandkids. And some brave and bold legislators actually took the attempt to actually pass a law to make sure that future generations would have those opportunities as well.
Why create wilderness? Would you elaborate on the benefits?
Yeah, so wilderness has a number of benefits. First, as I talked about, it really is kind of this permanent protection. It's a legislative protection, not like some administrative protections that can kind of change between administrations. I like to talk about the Wilderness Act as having kind of a number of teeth or very clear protections in the law, like no logging, no mining, no motorized use or roads, and no mechanized use for travel. It was a law that does have some flexibility in it, which I think we all appreciate 50 years later, but it really is about protecting the wild areas and the sense of areas that are relatively untouched by humans, which 50 years later, I think we can appreciate there are much fewer of those than there were then.
What is the value of protecting wild or untouched areas?
The key benefit is really all of the ecological benefits, whether it be for fish and wildlife habitat, salmon spawning streams, whether it be recreational benefits like the world-class recreational opportunities that drive lots of local economies in this state and others. Wilderness is important for that. Probably most central to most of us is a significant amount of Americans' safe and clean drinking water, you know, comes from watersheds or headwaters that are protected as wilderness up in the upper watersheds.
What was established by the original Wilderness Act? What was put into place specifically?
So like I said, there were the prohibitions that I mentioned earlier, and there was a system of lands, which is important, which is that areas can be designated as wilderness, and they are part of a system of lands that are managed consistently around the country. Another important point is that it is a management overlay on federal lands. So you can have park, national forest, or national wildlife refuge wilderness. It's a management overlay over federal lands and cannot be designated on non-federal lands.
Would you give some examples of the original wilderness areas that were first established?
Yeah. So back in 64, there were a handful of wilderness areas. I believe the Glacier Peak area here in Washington State was one of those to start the system off. And I think what's important is over the last 50 years in different states, there's been additional legislation to actually designate additional lands that merit wilderness as part of the system. And that system has grown significantly. I believe there's over 100 million acres of wilderness around the country.
Would you say more about what is and isn't allowed in wilderness?
Sure. So the Wilderness Act, as I said, has a number of things that it does prohibit. It does not allow mining, does not allow logging. Motorized use is prohibited in wilderness as well. I like to also say the list of things you can do in wilderness is actually much longer. You can hike, hunt, fish, raft, kayak, camp, backpack, berry pick, mushroom hunt. So it is really focused on trying to make sure that activities are happening that are unconfined and primitive to kind of capture and retain that opportunity for solitude, which is obviously very different given that, you know, we're a much urbanized society now. And I think that juxtaposition is well received here 50 years later.
Are pets allowed in wilderness?
So the Wilderness Act certainly doesn't have any prohibition on pets. I will tell you the specific answer to that is, for example, dogs, which we all love. If you have a Park Service wilderness, likely your dog isn't going to be allowed on trails. And if you have a Forest Service wilderness, it is. And that has actually more to do with the park regulations and the Forest Service regulations than the wilderness. Because again, we're talking about a management overlay. So on pets, the Wilderness Act is silent.
How much land is currently protected as wilderness? You gave a number of acres, but how about percent of the U.S.?
The percentage is really, I think, 10% or less of the United States. So it's actually a small number, even though over 100 million acres does seem like a lot. I will say that designating wilderness is not easy. Founding Fathers made any legislation very difficult, and it seems like it's only gotten more difficult here in 2014. So it takes a number of years to actually designate a wilderness. It's essential to have local support, and a lot of times we could be talking about anywhere between 5 and 10 years to actually get a wilderness proposal from start to finish. And I would say that despite all that effort, it's well worth it, because once you do protect it, it is kind of permanently protected for generations in the future.
Where is wilderness found in the U.S.?
It's found all over the United States. Certainly the vast majority of the wilderness acreage that we have is going to be in Alaska. And when you talk about public lands, Alaska always has the largest share of everything. But in lower 48, I believe that almost every state has a wilderness area. They can range from, even in our state, a very small wilderness, like some wilderness on the San Juan Islands that really is going to be extremely small, to some of the larger contiguous wildernesses in the Cascades. So it definitely varies. There isn't a size limit. There isn't a geographical limitation about what can merit wilderness designation.
Well, you started to mention where the wilderness areas in Washington State are located. Could you just go through and list where they all are?
And we have 31 wilderness areas in Washington State. They are around the state for sure. We have 7 national forests, and each of those has some wilderness in it. Our national parks have wilderness in them as well. The designation of those wilderness areas comes from the 1964 Wilderness Act, designated some areas in Washington State. Next, you would go to 1976, where the Alpine Lakes Wilderness, which is extremely close to Seattle metropolitan area and is arguably the most popular or most visited wilderness area because of that proximity. In 1984, which basically is another anniversary, the 30th anniversary of the Washington Wilderness Act, over 1 million acres was designated on national forest lands in Washington State, which was an important milestone. In 1988, Senator Dan Evans championed a bill that actually designated over 1.5 million acres of our national parks here in Washington State as wilderness, which is extremely important. And then since then, we've been working very hard to kind of designate additional areas in the last 10 years as well.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Tom Uniak, Conservation Director for Washington Wild. Our topic is the 1964 Wilderness Act, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. You said a bit about this earlier, but how are our wilderness areas managed? Who or what agencies are in charge?
There are 4 major land management agencies on the federal government, and that would be the National Park Service, which most people are familiar with, the National Forest Service, which also is, I think, for folks here in Washington, very familiar, the Bureau of Land Management, which actually manages the most land, but we don't have very many of those lands here in Washington State, and then the Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which manages national wildlife refuges. So any of those agencies can own land, and wilderness can and probably has been designated on all those areas. So again, it's a federal management overlay. A wilderness area is not separate from a park or separate from a national forest. It's simply an area within that federal land base that merits wilderness and is designated for management for future generations and to basically keep it the same.
How healthy are our wilderness areas overall in the U.S.?
Well, our wilderness areas represent kind of the intact ecosystems that really haven't had the impacts from man, whether it be logging or mining or what have you. So from a healthy perspective, I mean, they're the healthiest areas that we have. You know, you're talking about areas that are not developed, not logged or mined. And so they're actually operating and providing ecosystem services
To what extent do activities that border on wilderness affect their potential well-being?
So it's possible that you could have something across the boundary from a designated wilderness area that could affect that situation. The Wilderness Act is pretty clear that there is no buffer situation with a wilderness. You know, you draw the line and what's in is protected and what's out is not. So I think there isn't a buffer around a wilderness area that is part of the designation. It's kind of in or out. And there can be situations where you might have something on the border that could have an impact. But I think increasingly, wilderness areas are an enclave in the rest of our landscape, which is, increasingly developed. So that's kind of the benefits of protecting targeted areas like this as wilderness for decades and even maybe centuries to come.
What are the key threats to wilderness, or are there threats?
Obviously, wilderness is the protection that really takes care of a lot of those threats. But for areas that we're looking to potentially protect as wilderness, those threats include additional mining and the impacts from mining, which are very considerable, considering that the law that governs mining in this country is over 140 years old. It's the 1872 mining law that was actually signed by Ulysses S. Grant. Most of those laws that were kind of written to settle the West have been rewritten, thank goodness. This one actually hasn't. I think unsustainable logging has been a period of our history that can be a threat to some of these areas. And, climate change is going to be something that we're going to have to deal with. And I think from a wilderness area's perspective, like here in our state in Washington, an interesting fact is that we have quite a bit of wilderness. I think we probably rank fourth of all the states with designated wilderness areas, which is a great, we're very proud of that. However, most of that designation happened in 64, 76, and 84. And so on Forest Service lands, for example, more than 94% of that acreage is actually above 3,000 feet elevation. So we're talking about high elevation areas. Frankly, that's really what was able to be protected at that time. The timber industry was calling the shots. They had big biceps. And frankly, it happens to be a lot of rock and ice, not a lot of trees. A lot of those boundaries are drawn at tree line. And so we're very focused now in the last 10 years of designating new areas, kind of the next generation of wilderness that are actually moving those boundaries down the hill and carefully trying to protect areas that are low elevation. The reason this is important in 2014 is, number one, you're protecting old growth and mature forests. Number two, you're actually protecting salmon spawning streams, which have an incredible economic benefit as well as a wildlife and ecological benefit. Number three, you're protecting multi-season recreational opportunities for families. These are areas that are low enough where they're accessible for families to do day use hikes. They're also actually snow-free for, more than one season. And this is the reason people live, work, and play here in Washington State. And right now, what we're really focused on is including higher level of low elevation areas in wilderness designation.
Would you say more about how land becomes designated as wilderness? What is the process?
So the process is actually very democratic. It is very bottom up. Typically, it starts with a local group of concerned organizations or individuals, like my organization, our members, the coalitions that we work with that care about a place, see threats that they're concerned with, and then start to mount a local campaign to actually protect that as wilderness. I think the first stage is actually going together and figuring out a basic boundary that folks would draw to see what would be included in wilderness. The second and most important step is to actually reach out with local stakeholders and get buy-in. Generally, throughout this process, whatever you drew to protect, it kind of gets smaller. That's kind of the politics 101. It rarely gets bigger, but I think that's an important process. Reaching out to backcountry horsemen, mountain bikers, elected officials, addressing concerns, listening to people, and then actually making changes as you maybe get a public proposal. Then you need to kind of connect with a congressional champion, a House member, a Senate member, because ultimately our citizens can't designate a wilderness. That's Congress's purview. And so once you have a congressional champion, they have a different job to do, which is to get things through the other Washington, which is increasingly challenging and can take quite a while. So I think in summary, wilderness proposals are very democratic. They're bottom up. They require a significant amount of local support early on, and they do take a fair amount of time. We're probably not talking about 1 or 2 years. We're probably talking more about ultimately 5 to 10 years to actually get to the finish line.
What criteria does Congress use to designate an area as wilderness?
The Act has a criteria set out generally. It's looking for areas that are relatively untouched by the hand of man. It's looking for opportunities for solitude. It's looking for opportunities for unconfined and primitive recreation. There aren't any size limits on a wilderness. Like I've said before, there are wildernesses that are hundreds of acres, and there's wildernesses that are hundreds of thousands of acres. And I think there are a number of ways that wilderness has been designated. Certainly early on, what was being protected was some of the very scenic high elevation headwaters and snow-capped peaks, because those were so obviously worthy of protection. More recently, really what matters, as I talked about before, are kind of these lower elevation areas. I would add that climate change, I think most of us realize that climate change is coming, that it is real, and we may not know exactly how that's going to play out, particularly in a specific locale. But I would maintain that if we have 94% of our wilderness in this state on Forest Service lands in high elevation areas, that's not how you'd want to manage your stock portfolio. I think we want to make sure we invest in some lower elevation areas so that for wildlife, for recreational opportunities, and for ecological benefits, that we're protecting some more than 6% of these lower elevation areas as well.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Tom Uniak, Conservation Director for Washington Wild. Our topic is the 1964 Wilderness Act. Would you like to highlight current and recent campaigns to protect and create new wilderness in Washington State?
Yeah. So my organization has been very involved in a number of campaigns, particularly as I call this kind of next generation of wilderness, which is focused on moving boundaries down the hill and really carefully trying to draw lines that protect low elevation areas. And to do that while we're also preserving and enhancing recreational access, I think that's a really important thing. You can do both of those things, and we very much focus on doing both of those things. In 2000, we really worked to put forward a proposal for wilderness in the Skykomish Valley on the Highway 2 corridor near Stevens Pass. And 8 years later, that actually got designated as the Wild Sky Wilderness. And that's 106,000 acres. Unlike most of the wilderness and Forest Service lands, which is, 6%, the Wild Sky was 30% low elevation, and that was very deliberate. And part of the reason it took so long was because that was really a focus for our congressional champion, Senator Patty Murray, and Congressman Rick Larson. We have a bill in Congress right now that's moving forward, which is to designate 22,000 acres of wilderness that would add to the Alpine Lakes Wilderness in the Middle Fork Valley near North Bend, and that's a National Forest Wilderness Area. And it's passed the Senate and recently passed the House Committee just last month. So we're hopeful that that has a chance to actually get designated here at the end of this Congress, at the end of the year. So we're waiting to see about that. Interestingly, this proposal actually also includes Wild Scenic River designation, which is something that my organization, working with groups like American Whitewater, have actually worked hard to make sure when we're designating wilderness, we're also designating wild and scenic rivers. We only have 200 miles of wild and scenic rivers in this state, which is not a lot. Our neighbors in Oregon, who share a lot of the same great rivers and kind of landscapes, they have 2,000 miles of designated rivers. So we're definitely trying to catch up with protecting our rivers. We also have another legislation in Congress that was just introduced by Senator Murray and Congressman Derek Kilmer, the Wild Olympics legislation, which would look at adding 126,000 acres of wilderness on the Olympic National Forest, which surrounds Olympic National Park on the Olympic Peninsula. And it would also designate 26 wild and scenic rivers. And one other thing I might mention, the Alpine Lakes bill is really an interesting one because the champions there are Senator Patty Murray, obviously a Democrat, but also Congressman Dave Reichert, who's a Republican. And that really is kind of rekindling what is really a long history of bipartisan support for wilderness in this state. People like Dan Evans, who was a Republican governor and later senator, has been a monumental figure in supporting and designating wilderness in this state. Other folks like Sid Morrison, who is a Republican from the East Side, teaming up with folks like Scoop Jackson, Senator Jackson, a Democrat. And we're really proud of that history, and it's good to see that that is continuing here 50 years later.
What do you think is the likelihood of the current bills that are before Congress passing?
My assessment is that certainly with the Alpine Lakes legislation, which has been in Congress for several years, I would say that it's a matter of not of if, but when. There's a huge amount of support for the Alpine Lakes legislation, local support, over 300 local elected officials, faith leaders, sportsmen, local businesses that have supported this. So I don't think that's in question and hasn't been for several years. But, you know, the process in D.C. is a mystery to a lot of us, and it takes a lot of twists and turns. There are some ideological opposition that can't be addressed that is prevalent on both coasts out here and there, and that's just going to be there. So I think we've done the job. We've got the support. We have, you know, great champions that tirelessly are pushing that legislation through Congress. And so I would say it's really more a matter of when rather than if. But patience is a virtue. And if you want to protect wilderness, you better have that.
Would you say more about how you work with non-traditional allies in designating wilderness?
Yeah, that's a huge part of what we do. I've always said an environmentalist talking about the environment is not that compelling, kind of preaching to the choir. But a hunter talking about protecting roadless areas, or a Republican talking about the need to protect wilderness. One of the best examples is, I think most people may not know that, you know, in 1964, the Wilderness Act prohibits mechanized travel, which includes mountain bikes. And I think probably the folks that were debating this in 64 did not anticipate that there were going to be bikes on our forests and trails. But of course, there are. So that's been a difficult challenge between the mountain bike community and wilderness groups around the country, which I think most people would think would be two peas in a pod. I know my mountain bike friends are quite conservation minded. Here in Washington State, we've actually been pretty successful working with the mountain bike community to actually build trust and sit down and reach common ground on the Alpine Lakes legislation, which is moving through Congress. The Middle Fork Trail is an important mountain biking trail. What we did is we work with them to actually exclude that trail to make sure that it could be rebuilt and retain the mountain bike use by not including it in wilderness. And as a result, the mountain bike community was able to endorse the 21,000 acres that actually was wilderness in the Pratt Valley. And that is really not something that happens a lot around the country. It took a lot of building trust and kind of drawing lines very carefully, but it's been a really great result and something that kind of typifies the type of work that goes in even before a bill gets introduced in Congress by reaching out to local stakeholders.
To what extent has our view of wilderness changed since the Wilderness Act became law in 1964?
The Wilderness Act and the gentleman who actually wrote it and created it, including Howard Zonizer, who is kind of credited with writing and drafting most of the legislation, I think they were very forward-thinking. Obviously, there are some real protections that are there, as I've mentioned earlier, but there's also a fair amount of flexibility and adaptability in the Act, which I know I appreciate 50 years later. There are provisions that allow agency discretion to actually use motorized or mechanized tools if it's deemed as the minimum tool. An example of this might be on the Pacific Crest Trail. If we have a storm event and a steel bridge washes out, obviously repairing that is an important priority from a recreation perspective. And the use of helicopters can happen if the agency decides that that's the minimum tool. And I think that was very forward thinking. There are references to health and safety and things of that nature that can happen with agency discretion, which I think is important. I will say that 50 years later, I think, like I mentioned before, the types of areas that we're trying to protect very carefully while we're preserving, enhancing, and access at the same time are these low elevation areas. And the Act allows us to do that. We have to be much more careful. We have to do a lot more reaching out with local stakeholders. Obviously, these low elevation areas are what everybody wants. That's what extractive industries wants. That's where the trees are. That's where the minerals are. That's where great views for houses are. That's where roads are. And so you have to be more careful and you have to be more inclusive. But the Wilderness Act does allow us to draw boundaries that protect those areas even 50 years later.
Going forward, what are the best ways to protect wilderness? Where should we focus our efforts?
As I said before, I think we want to make sure that we are appreciative of the efforts to protect so much wilderness in this state to date. And I think particularly on our Forest Service lands, we want to make sure that we're capturing these low elevation areas. And again, the reason is it's just so important to the quality of life that we all enjoy here in Washington. It is the reason why we live, work, and play here. There are businesses, whether it be REI or Outdoor Research or other businesses, that understand that there's actually a competitive advantage. They have to compete for skilled workers. And the fact that here in Washington State, we have so many recreational opportunities and opportunities to get outdoors and do these activities, that's actually a competitive advantage when they're recruiting employees. And so I think we really need to be able to carefully protect low-elevation areas to kind of even out our portfolio of protection on wilderness lands. And then I think it's also important that we do it in a way that is also preserving and enhancing recreational access. My organization does not work so hard to protect areas so that no one can use them. I mean, we are working to protect these areas because we want both current and future generations to enjoy them. And that means that we need to make sure that major trunk roads have funding to be fixed to get people to access these areas. And we need to draw boundaries that are preserving and enhancing recreational access while protecting these low elevation areas as well.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, well, I really appreciate the opportunity. I mean, this is a big year for Washington State and my organization in wilderness. We have three anniversaries. The 1964 Wilderness Act is 50 years old. The 1984 Washington Wilderness Act, which protected, you know, so many acres, over a million acres of Forest Service land as wilderness, is 30 years old. And my organization is 35 years old. So it's a very timely invitation, and I'm happy to share that with your listeners.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
You were just listening to Tom Uniac, Conservation Director for Washington Wild. For more information, check on the web at wawild.org. Again, that's wawild.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.